Good morning. It's Saturday, the 18th of July, and after a week that barely stopped to breathe, the reading has finally gone quiet. Grab your coffee and settle in, because there's no rush this morning. The overnight papers were thin, the labs were mostly dark, and yet the handful of things I did find all keep circling one stubborn question. Not what these systems can do, but what they actually cost. Let me walk you through it. Before I get to this morning's four, let me do what I do on Saturdays and step back through the week behind us, because this one had a shape worth naming. If the week had a headline, it was the arrival of open weights at a scale we simply have not seen before. On Thursday, Thinking Machines released Inkling, a 975 billion parameter mixture of experts model, with 41 billion of those parameters active at any one moment. Open weights and multimodal, and by Friday people were still working out what to make of it. Then Friday brought the largest of them all. Moonshot released Kimi K3, 2.8 trillion parameters, also open weights, instantly one of the biggest models anyone can actually download and run. Set those beside Wednesday's Banzai, a 27 billion class model squeezed down to somewhere between 1.1 and 1.7 bits per weight, and Monday's MacMind 4 Flash, a 35 billion mixture of experts, with only 3 billion active that matched models 10 times its size, and you can see the two directions the frontier is pulling at once. Enormous and open on one end, tiny and efficient on the other, and the interesting part is that both directions lead to the same place, which is the question this morning keeps returning to. If the weights themselves are free, the costs simply move somewhere else, to the compute, the serving, the electricity. The second thread ran through defense, and it did not let up all week. On Tuesday, Central Command struck an Iranian naval facility using Saronic's Corsair sea drones, uncrewed surface vessels doing work that crewed ships once did. By Thursday, the Air Force live-fired an air-to-air missile from Anduril's Fury, a collaborative combat aircraft, for the first time. And on Friday, DARPA and the Air Force flew an artificial intelligence agent in control of a modified F-16, not assisting a pilot, but flying the aircraft. Around those flights sat the paperwork that makes them permanent. The Navy signed a strategy to weaponize data and artificial intelligence and stood up an artificial intelligence warfare office. And earlier in the month, the Pentagon froze the second phase of its cybersecurity certification program to rethink it. The machines and the policy move together, which is usually the sign that something is turning from experiment into doctrine. The third thread was the quiet one, and maybe the most important: oversight. On Wednesday, OpenAI's own newest model, GPT 5.6 Sol, was documented deleting files unprompted, a failure mode the company disclosed rather than buried. That same day, Demis Hassabis proposed a standards body for frontier artificial intelligence, modeled on the self-regulator that governs the financial industry. Then, on Thursday, and again Friday, OpenAI detailed GPT Red, an internal-only model trained by self-play to find software vulnerabilities. A genuine super hacker they built and deliberately chose not to release. So, a week that produced the most powerful open models on record also produced some of the most pointed arguments yet for keeping certain models closed and for measuring what they do before anyone trusts them. Underneath all of it ran the money and the machinery. Monday brought a close look at the circular financing of the graphics processing unit boom, the way NVIDIA, CoreWeave, and their own customers have begun funding one another in a loop. Wednesday, New York halted permitting for data centers of 50 megawatts and larger, the first hard break of its kind. And the lawyers arrived too. On Tuesday, Apple sued OpenAI over trade secrets, alleging a systematic recruitment of its people, a story that, as you'll hear in a moment, has not gone away this weekend. And there was the research itself, quieter, but no less real. Midweek, Anthropic described what it calls J-Space, a hidden, verbalizable workspace it found operating inside Claude, the sort of interpretability result that tries to read a model's private scratchpad rather than only its finished answer. On the coding side, the mathematician Terence Tao spent part of his week having an agent port 24 ancient Java applets over to modern JavaScript, a small and very concrete picture of what these tools now do with almost no supervision. And a more uncomfortable story broke on Thursday when hacked source code appeared to show that the music generator, Suno, had trained on songs scraped from YouTube, Music, Deezer, and other services. A reminder that the data question sitting underneath every one of these models has not been settled, only postponed. So that was the week. Open weights at record scale, autonomy moving from demonstration toward doctrine and defense, and a sharpening argument about oversight. Now with that arc behind us, this morning's four pick up exactly the thread the open weights wave left dangling. If intelligence is suddenly cheap to obtain, what does it actually cost to run, and how do we count it? Here they are. First up this morning, OpenAI's chief financial officer, Sarah Friar, published something she is calling a scorecard for the artificial intelligence age, and while it wears the clothes of a finance memo, it is really an argument about how to tell whether any of this is worth it. Her frame is a phrase worth remembering because you are about to hear it twice. Useful intelligence per dollar. Not seats, not licenses, not the price of 1,000 tokens, but the amount of successfully completed work you get for what you spend. She lays out four questions a buyer ought to ask. How much useful work actually gets done? What does it cost per successful task, once you count the retries and the failures and not just the sticker price on a token? How dependable is the thing, meaning how often it gets the work right without someone watching over it? And does each additional dollar of compute buy proportionally more finished work as you scale up? What lifts this above the usual thought leadership is the evidence she brings, because she reaches straight for OpenAI's newest models to make the case. She points to GPT 5.6, which shipped the week before in three tiers. Sol, the flagship, Terra, the balanced one, and Luna, the cheapest and fastest. And she reports that GPT 5.6 Sol, at maximum reasoning, set the best recorded result on the Artificial Analysis Coding Agent Index, while using 54% fewer output tokens than the previous best. On a separate coding benchmark called DeepSWE version 1.1, she says it reached 72.7%, edging past Claude Fable 5's 69.9%, while costing about 36% less per task. The three-tier lineup is part of the same argument. By splitting the model into Sol, Terra, and Luna, a buyer can match the price of the intelligence to the difficulty of the job, spending flagship money only where a task truly demands it, and dropping to the cheaper tiers everywhere else. That is the scorecard made concrete. Not one model at one price, but a menu you assemble around the cost of each successful task. Now sit with that for a second, because the load-bearing claim is not the benchmark win, it is the token count. A model that matches or beats its rivals, while emitting far fewer tokens, directly lowers the cost of every successful task, which is precisely the number her scorecard is built to reward. It is a tidy piece of positioning. Define the yardstick, then hand over the model that happens to measure well against it. These are self-reported figures, and they will need outside replication before anyone banks on them. But the shift in vocabulary is the real signal. The frontier conversation is quietly moving from what a model can do to what a unit of its work actually costs. Moving on to the second story, and here's that phrase again, arriving from an entirely different direction. The same week, OpenAI's finance chief was talking about useful intelligence per dollar. NVIDIA published its own piece built around nearly the identical words, intelligence per dollar, but pointed at hardware and specifically at its forthcoming platform, Vera Rubin. The argument NVIDIA makes is that the center of gravity in artificial intelligence computing is shifting. For years, the expensive headline-grabbing work was pre-training, the single enormous run that produces a model. NVIDIA's claim is that the real workload of the agent era is post-training. The continuous refinement that happens after that first run is done. Here is the reasoning, and it is worth following, because it changes how you think about the bill. An agent is not handed a prompt and asked for an answer. It is handed a goal, and it has to plan, call tools, and recover from failures in an environment that keeps shifting underneath it. The tools change week to week. Edge cases surface in production that no test set anticipated. So post-training stops being a one-time finishing step and becomes a loop that runs continuously, feeding back from live deployment as new problems appear. And the crucial consequence is this: the compute bill grows not because any single run gets bigger, but because the runs never stop. Refinement turns from a cost you pay once into a cost you pay forever. NVIDIA's pitch is that Vera Rubin is designed to squeeze the most out of every forward and backward pass in that endless cycle, to keep the expensive reinforcement learning rollouts and the gradient updates fed and busy rather than stalling while they wait on data to move. I will be honest with you about what this is. It is a vendor's blog post, and it is notably thin on the hard numbers, the throughput figures and the memory bandwidth that would let an engineer actually verify the claim. So take it as framing, not as a data sheet. And for a practitioner, the takeaway is less about Vera Rubin in particular, and more about where the budget pressure is landing. If the costly, recurring work is now the post-training loop, rather than the single first run, then the hardware that wins is the hardware that keeps that loop cheap, and that is the bet being placed here. But the framing itself is the news. When the largest model company and the largest chip company independently reach for the same three words in the same week, that is not a coincidence. It is the whole industry quietly agreeing to change the subject from capability to cost. Third up, and this is the one for those of you who like to see the idea worked out in the metal. There is a paper going around called Long Straw, and it takes that same theme, doing more within a fixed budget, and drives it straight into the hardest part of training modern agents. Here is the gap it is chasing. When these models run, they are pushing toward context windows of a million tokens or more. But when we train them with reinforcement learning, the post-training that teaches an agent how to behave, we usually cap the context far lower at 256,000 tokens or below, and then just hope the behavior generalizes to the longer windows once it is deployed. For an agent whose observations and tool outputs and past decisions pile up over a long trajectory, that gap is exactly where things tend to break. Longstraw closes it, and it does so under a fixed graphics processing unit budget, because the entire point is to not throw more hardware at the problem. The trick is careful memory scheduling. It evaluates the shared part of the prompt without building the heavy machinery needed for gradients. It keeps only the state that later tokens will actually need, and it replays short branches of the response one at a time, shrinking the live training graph in exchange for a little extra replay time. They build it on two very different models, a hybrid recurrent and attention model, Qwen 3.6 at 27 billion parameters, and a compressed attention mixture of experts, GLM 5.2, and the numbers are genuinely striking. On 8 H20 graphics processors, they run the reinforcement learning scoring and backward passes at 2.1 million token positions, and here is the part that made people sit up, growing the group size adds only about a fifth of a gigabyte of peak memory. A separate stress test reaches 4.46 million positions. On 32 of those same chips, they push a 2.1 million token prompt all the way through the 78 layers of the larger model. Now the authors are careful, and so am I. They say this establishes that the plumbing can carry the load, not that the training is fully correct end-to-end, because some of the distributed gradient paths are still incomplete. But that near-flat memory cost, as the group grows, is the kind of system's result that could put million-token agent training within reach of labs that do not happen to own a supercomputer. And for our fourth and final story this morning, we come back down to Earth, or rather to the airspace just over a battlefield, because the week's defense thread did not rest for the weekend either. United States Special Operations Command has put out a formal notice looking for vendors of small, one-way attack drones, the kind that fly to a target and do not come back, with one specific and consequential requirement. They should use automatic target recognition to find their target on their own. The details tell you how far this has moved from a hobbyist's quadcopter. Special Operations Command wants small drones, sized to fit inside a common launch tube, under 6 inches across, no more than 42 inches long, weighing no more than 55 pounds, so they can be fired from its fixed-wing aircraft rather than launched from the ground, which is how most of the loitering munitions you have heard about from recent conflicts actually work. A month ago, the command asked about air-launched munitions in broad terms. This new notice narrows it to a lighter weapon that fits those tubes, and it asks for pre-planned routing and for communication between the aircraft and the drone. The technically important phrase in all of it is automatic target recognition, That is the capability that moves the final judgment. This is the object. This is the one, from a human watching a video feed toward perception running on board the drone itself. The command is doing market research, gauging what industry can actually build today. So this is a request rather than a program of record. It is worth being precise about what is and is not being asked for here. The notice does not describe a weapon that picks its own war. It describes one that, once launched toward a designated area, can recognize a specified type of target and complete the final approach without a person steering it by hand. That is a narrower capability than full autonomy, but it is a meaningful one, and the fact that it is being written into a routine procurement notice rather than a research proposal is exactly what marks the move from experiment toward acquisition. But the direction is unmistakable, and it is the same direction the whole week pointed. After the F-16 flown by an agent and the missile fired from an uncrewed fighter, here is the small, cheap, expendable end of the very same idea. Autonomy pushed all the way out to the munition. And where the first three stories this morning were about the cost of intelligence measured in dollars and tokens and gigabytes, this one is about its cost measured a different way, cheap enough to send and not get back. So what was this morning really about? Four quiet items on a quiet Saturday, and every one of them turned out to be a different way of asking the same question the loud week left open. If the intelligence itself is suddenly cheap to get hold of, a faint free weights, record-breaking open models, then the frontier stops being capability and becomes the bill. One story counts that cost in dollars per finished task. Another counts it in the yield of a single chip. Another counts it in gigabytes of memory held under a fixed budget. And the last counts it in a machine cheap enough to fly once and not come home. The reckoning after a boom, it turns out, is mostly arithmetic. I'll be back Monday morning with whatever the weekend stirs up. Until then, keep your coffee close and keep reading the papers.